But that's not Jesus' desire. His desire is not for you to be aware of him and to know that he is your Savior. What is his desire? We've spoken about this quite a lot in church in the last couple of months. John 17, verse 24 is his desire. He says, Father, he prays to, it's amazing the prayer in eternity that we're able to read this, but he says, Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. Okay, so Jesus' desire is not for you to be aware of Jesus and of God. His desire is for you to be where he is. So there's a difference in that. So we live our lives and we're trying to be sort of, we know Jesus is going with me wherever I am going, instead of looking for Jesus every day and where he is. See, the Bible says, follow me. There's a difference. I'm not sure if you're picking it up, but there's a difference. It's not just being aware of Jesus. It's being where Jesus is. You have to leave everything and follow him. Now, by meaning leave everything, I'm your desires. I'm not saying leave your work, sell your farm, and try and follow Jesus. I'm not talking about that. See, for you to follow Jesus is to leave your desires. And then what happens is, and that's what I spoke at the beginning, your desire to seek him becomes the main thing. Your dream is to find him, not to find your dreams. See, my whole life, in my first part of my 20s, I followed my dream as a golf pro. And I tried to just bring awareness of Jesus in my dream. But I never followed him. I took him with. It was never his dream for my life. It was my dream. I'm not saying all golf pros is wrong. But if the Lord is going there, you need to go there. But if he's not, make sure you're not going on your own. And try and, God, just bless me on this dream. So unfortunately, we become careless. And that's what I said, careless presupposition. We become careless. And we think because we are mature Christians, I've got quite a big awareness of Jesus in my life. So I think I'm fine. Okay, I want to read to us in Luke 2, verse 41. The danger of being mature and thinking that you are a mature Christian. In Luke 2, 41, it says, Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. Okay, so this is Jesus' parents. He was 12 years old. They went to the feast of Passover. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it. But supposing him to be in the group, carelessly they supposed that he was with them. They went a day's journey, but then they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances. So I must think it might be quite a scary thing, as assuming that Jesus is in the group as parents, as mature parents. And then all of a sudden, today is not like it was yesterday. Because yesterday Jesus was here. Today he's not here anymore. And I think so quickly we can become careless, mature Christians. We think yesterday is today. Now you can maybe say, Charles, that's out of context. That's not what Jesus was talking about. It's just a story. I'm like, okay. See, what is Jesus' prayer that he teaches us? He says, Father, give us today, our daily bread. There's a lot of characters in the Bible that understood this thing. They didn't assume yesterday was today. David in Psalm says, Early in the morning I seek you. Every day I seek you. 1 Chronicles 16:11 says, seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his presence continually. Continually. Keep in step with the Spirit. We're going to get there. Keep in step with the Spirit. Your assurance is not maturity, an assumption of yesterday. It is the rock, Jesus. The rock will not erode away. So, as I was meditating on this, and I'm like, Lord, how do I know I'm not the pastor that will do something that I don't want to do? Because I'm sure most of them are like, I don't want to do that, but it happened. How do I know, how do I know that I'm not that guy? And how do I know that the people I'm leading don't do that? That they do something they don't want to do? How do we measure that we are not eroding away? So I felt the Lord say, there's a marker. There's markers I've put in the Word that you can watch. And I want to read that to us. And it's, I just felt the Lord said, it's not complicated. It's very easy, very straightforward, black and white in Galatians 5. Galatians 5. I want to read that to us, verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. Those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with the passions and desires, what we spoke about now. I'm going to read that again. Those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires, meaning the passions that you've got for your life and the desires you've got for your life, you've crucified, because now you're following Jesus. You're not living your passions and desires out and taking Jesus with you and just having a assurance that he's with you and assuming that he's with you. Because further on in verse 25, since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. See, it's not complicated. We're going to go through the fruit of the Spirit. But a fruit of the Spirit is something that shows to me if you are in the Spirit or not. It's as uncomplicated as that. Are you in the Spirit or not? Are you full of the Spirit or not? Just to sort of hit the nail again, just to make sure that we understand this, how does the Bible say we should identify false teachers and false prophets? By their fruit. Not by what they say, because on the surface, just like the Sinkel syndrome, on the surface everything looks fine. Everything looks great. But underneath the surface, he might be eroding away. And how do we know if somebody's a false teacher? I need to know him. How do I know fruit of the Spirit? I need to know that person. We need to go camping so that when he puts up a tent with his wife, I'll see if he's got patience or not. And how many people in this world, John 17, Luke 2 again, his parents did not know it, but supposing him to be in the group. So a lot of us mature Christians, we follow people because the group is following the man. And we're supposing that we don't know him, but we listen to his teachings. How do you know what's the fruit of that man? That's why I said a couple of weeks ago, the devil is on a mission to break down local church. He's on a mission to take away local church and local so that we can know each other's fruits. Just follow him because it sounds good. A lot of us, of maybe, you know, there's people in among us that's following people, and you don't know his fruit. We shouldn't be careless. So, when it comes to fruit of the Spirit, it's fruit of the Spirit. Okay. It's not fruit of a mature Charles. You can't manufacture good fruit. You can try, but it's not going to last. And I think a lot of us, when we read through the love, patience, and we read through that, we're like, oh, I'm failing there, I'm failing there, I'm failing there. I want to set you free tonight. It's not that you are failing. It's that you're not in the Spirit. There's a difference. You're not failing to produce fruit. You're failing to be in the Spirit. Because it's something, a good tree bears good fruit. A bad tree can't bear good fruit. So if you're unpatient and you're not loving, you don't have joy, you're not in the Spirit. Because you can't manufacture that. And that should set you free. That's why I said at the beginning, are you seeking the Lord with all your heart, all your mind? Are you seeking him? Because when you find him, the fruit of the Spirit will bear, you will bear fruit. Does it make sense? It's not something that you feel. Fruit of the Spirit is not something that you feel like you want to do. It's not a feeling. It's an overflow of being in the Spirit. It's an overflow of spending time with him, of digging into the Spirit. I don't know why, it's a new term that I've just felt, because one of my first fruit that goes, we spoke about as elders, we're like, okay, we can do this in the communities, but we spoke about as elders, we see, especially our spouses, where's Yaku's first fruit? That goes when he needs to get to the Lord. So my first one's joy. I'm normally quite a joyful guy, but my first one's joy. But my wife is quite good on that, to point it out to me. She's like, you need to get before the Lord. And then I know. Then I'll come to church, I'll put on the speakers on as loud as I can, and I worship the Lord. And I find my joy as I dig in to the Spirit. See, all these fruits are not, they're not mindsets. All these fruits are a person that I'm living out of. So as I find the person, I find the fruit. So the first one, love. I'm going to try and go as quickly as I can through them. Love. 2 Corinthians 5 says, for the love of Christ controls us. Some of the translation says compels us. Because we have concluded this, that one has died for all, therefore all have died. And he died for all, that those who live might no longer live for themselves, but for him who for their sake died and was raised. So basically, his love kills you. As I experience his love, it compels me. It compels me to live differently. It compels me to live in a different way. So you can measure now. Remember Sinkel syndrome. Remember this as we go through the fruit. Do you have a love inside of you that controls you? That makes your desires different. That make you look differently at people. Because don't try and fabricate this thing. Listen now. Don't try and fabricate it. If the love of the Lord's not controlling you, you need to get to the Lord. Because otherwise you're eroding away, and one day you're going to do something that you don't want to do. That's why the Lord said, measure yourself with the fruit of the Spirit, to know that if you are in the Spirit or not. So if your love is not, His love is not controlling you, you're not in the Spirit. You're trying to fabricate love. So for me, that's one of the last things that sort of goes. When I lose my love for people, because I've got a mercy gift, so I've got quite, the Lord gave me a mercy gift. You understand this? The Lord gave it to me. So I've got a revelation that I look at people like He does. That's the gift. Okay? So when somebody sends me a message and I'm like, ugh, then I know I need to get to the Lord. I'm not even going to respond until I'm full of the Spirit again. Because if I'm not, I'm eroding away. Okay, does it make sense? So you can actually measure yourself. 1 Corinthians 13 verse 4 says, love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices with truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. See, measure yourself with that love. And if not, get in the Spirit. Dig into the Spirit so that you will love like that. And this will be your rock, and make sure that you're not eroding away. Okay? One of the things that we need to measure ourselves with, and this is a very high bar. Love does not envy or boast. Okay, so we can so easily read through this and not stop at that. But I felt the Lord tell me stop there and speak a little bit about it. So we've become a generation that is driven for success. We're driven for success. So that makes us very envious or very boastful. Envious because I'm not as successful as that brother or sister. Or boastful, I keep on buying new things to look successful. I keep on looking at other people. I keep on measuring success. But when I love, yet again, if I'm in the Spirit, I live like He does. I won't envy what a brother's got, but here's the thing that I think a little bit more important in this. I won't boast about what I've got. Because I'm trying to, it's the love that does not boast. So it's not just not boasting. It's loving people will make me not boast. Does that make sense now? So when I've got the love of the Spirit in me, I don't want to boast about what I've got, because that's going to make Him envious. You understand? So there's a very high bar. Even when you've got millions in a bank, please do not live in a way, in an unloving way, so that people will look at you and see, yo, you're so successful. See, I think God's called us to a much higher bar. That even if you've got, and He's blessed you with money, don't live in a way that makes other people like, oh. That's being boastful. Okay. You guys okay with me? Love rejoices in the truth. That's a strange thing. Eh? We haven't thought about it. Love rejoices in the truth. So when, very important for this preach, and we're very important for us as a family, fruit, I'm going to go into that quickly later on, but fruit is for people to see. Okay, so that's why we need each other, and that's why we spoke about it as elders as well. We need each other. So if you, I don't always see my fruit. I know that I think I'm okay in some of those areas, but my wife will quickly show me, hey, your joy is gone. But we need each other. So here's the thing. When a brother walks up to you and he says, hey, Tian, how are you doing, man? And I just saw that you, you know, in a loving way, I'm doing this quickly now. Normally we'll do it in a very loving way, but I see you a little bit impatient. Are you okay? Are you? Now, he can either rejoice with the lie or he can rejoice with the truth. Now, rejoicing in the truth is trying to find out, Lord, is this true? So, let's backtrack now. God's desire, or Jesus' desire, is to for you to be where he is. Now, in a very practical way, what does that mean? When I walk up to Tian, and I say to him, brother, I think you're impatient. He can decide if he wants to look for Jesus in this situation now or not. Follow Jesus in the situation. Now, following Jesus in this situation is rejoicing in the truth. Because who's the truth? I'm the way, the truth, and the life. So if he finds the truth, he finds Jesus. So when somebody talks to me about, and I open my heart, because I want to find Jesus. I want to follow him. So if people don't see this kind of fruit in my life, I want to know it. And that's why we spoke about it. I said, guys, we need to watch out for each other. We need to speak to each other. And if you take offense on that, you're rejoicing with the devil. Then you will start a road away. And one day you'll do something that you don't want to do. Does that make sense? I need to move on. Joy. So, like I said, it's my first marker. Just a quick thing on joy. Joy, yet again, is to see Jesus in situations. See Jesus in situations. I had a brother not long ago speaking to my life, and yeah, actually something that he felt, and he had to forgive, and I had to forgive, and I actually said to him, in that situation, it could have gone so quickly, so bad. But in that situation, I saw him, and I, actually in his eyes, I saw Jesus as he forgave me. And I find a joy in an awkward situation because I found Jesus. Actually, really rejoiced in my heart because of the truth in that moment. So joy is a person. But I want to, just quickly one thing. We enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. So if you're struggling with joy, you need to get into his presence, okay, so that you can experience joy. But if you're struggling to get into his presence, maybe, just maybe, it's because you're moaning all the time and you're not being thankful. Because he says to get into his courts and into his presence is by thanksgiving and praise. So if your clock goes, don't know what's that in English. It's a moaning sock. If you're a moaning sock, you're not getting to the Lord's presence. How much of your time before the Lord is complaining and being sad about your situations? And you're struggling to manufacture this joy. If you want joy, be thankful. There's a lot to be thankful for in life. A lot. Just the fact that you're alive is grace. So if you want to experience the Lord, go into his courts with thanksgiving and praise. Stop being a clarkos. A moaning sock. I'm going to remember that. Peace. A lot of people, I think this is the biggest cave or erosion or whatever underneath us, is worry, the lack of peace. And I've got one thing to say to you tonight. If you struggle with peace, if you've got worry, anxiousness, one thing. Peace is not a place. It's a person. Remember that. Peace is not a place, it's a person. What I mean by that, peace is not a good place, a place where there's no situations, a place where everything is honkadori, everything is fine. That's not peace. Peace is a person in that place. So if you're struggling with peace, don't try and manufacture it. Dig into the spirit and you'll find peace. That's why I've got my heavenly spirit language. I love talking in that because it just takes me into the spirit. When I'm in a situation, I'm just like trying to, I don't know what to say. I just try and get into the spirit. Get into the Lord. And you will find peace, because peace is a person. When I find the person, listen, when I find that person in a situation, I don't try and look for theological answers for my situation. I don't look for why or how. I look for the person of Jesus and I'll find peace, because he's the Prince of Peace. Amen. Forbearance and patience is a fruit as well. So quickly on that, if you struggle with patience, you've got a lack of humbleness. Okay. If you're an impatient person, you're quite a selfish person then. Because impatience is, you're so focused on yourself and your time. So, yeah, go and chew on that. Lack of humbleness, I believe. Love is patient. Love, what does Jesus' love do? Kills you. Okay, so Jesus' love makes you humble. Love is patient. Humbleness equals patience. Okay, it's not complicated. Goodness. I'm sure the word doesn't really talk, or the fruit. This fruit is not good works, especially not good works. It works in the spirit. So you can be busy with a lot of things that you think is good, but it's not God. Make sure you're in the spirit. Okay? And you will do good. Even if it doesn't look good to the world, it will be good because it's in the spirit. Okay? Faithfulness. We've got three more to go. Faithfulness. Just quickly on faithfulness, for me, on each of these fruits, I just spoke to the Lord about it, and I felt this one. Faithfulness for me is what I felt for us. It's faithfulness in your calling, what God has called us to. What has God called you to in Swellendam? What has God called you into in this church, in your community? Now, if I'm in the Spirit, I'll be faithful in that. So measure yourself if you're in the spirit and you're not eroding away. Because are you being faithful in what God has called you in? If you're not being faithful in what God has called you to and you're not following him, you're not being in the spirit. Okay. So as I was prepping on this and meditating on each fruit, I just felt the Lord. I sometimes I had two nightmares. I said this morning dreams, but it's not a dream, it's a nightmare. It's probably from too much steak or pizza. But then I probably had it twice, where I dreamed that Renske is my wife, where she just started flirting with somebody else. In the one dream and the other dream, she actually walked away and left me. I remember waking up and I was actually like mad at her, and she's sleeping, her beautiful self just sleeping. And I'm all mad, and because it's so real. It's so real in a dream. And I remember how my heart just felt like it was ripped out of my rib cage. Just think of it if you're married, what it will feel like for you when your wife or your husband just walks away. And here's the thing, just if your wife or your husband just gives a bit more attention to somebody else. And I just felt the Lord say to me, that's exactly how I feel when you're not being faithful in what I've called you to. See, he made a covenant with us And our covenant is to follow him. Are you being faithful in that? And here's the thing again. Listen, I want to, there should be, you should be feel free when I say this. You can't manufacture faithfulness. Because everything inside of you don't want to follow Jesus. If you're in the Spirit, you'll be faithful. So if you're not walking in what Jesus has asked you, make sure that you are in the Spirit. Gentleness, quickly. I think the Lord's being gentle with us in this, just as an example. Make sure that you are a gentle man or a gentle woman. You can be truthful and gentle at the same time. Remember that. I think the Lord, Johan van Deventer, years ago said to me, I've got a soft point shoe. I can kick people and it doesn't hurt. I think the Lord's got a soft point shoe as well. He kicks us. Sometimes it actually hurts, but I think we should try and be a bit more as people. Even when we speak to people about fruit in their lives, make sure that we're doing it gently. And then the last one, I think, is probably the one that's the most rotten fruit in the church today, is self-control. Now, self-control, I'm not just talking about not getting angry. Self-control can also be discipline. You're controlling yourself. Are you seeking the Lord daily? Are you being disciplined in that? Yet again, it's a fruit of the Spirit. If you're struggling with that, it's one of my weak points as well. It's really seeking the Lord daily and praying. Being disciplined in prayer. See, if I'm not full of the Spirit, I struggle with that. I struggle, honestly, I struggle to give myself in prayer. Just think of it easy, just... For us as Christians, when you feel empty, it's difficult to go to church, isn't it? You don't really want to go. When you're empty, you don't really want to go to community. You don't really want to spend time with the Lord. And it's just a testimony of not being full of the Spirit. Because when I'm full of the Spirit, it comes easily. It flows out of me, spending time with Him. Okay? So watch out. This is a massive erosion in all of us, self-control. If we're not being self-controlled, we're eroding away. So I wanna finish up with, let us not be careless. Let us not try and maturely fake fruit. Because one day, just one day, everything underneath you will cave away. Because you're assuming that today was yesterday. You're assuming that Jesus is with you. So Jesus will never leave you or forsake you. He says that. But it doesn't say that you can't turn away. And you can leave him and not follow him. See, the Lord's prayer is for you to be where he is, to follow him, to pick up your cross and nail your desires and everything on that cross, because your desires lead to death. You need to know that. For you to be on the rock, you need to let go. Dig into Jesus. Dig into the Spirit so that you will find the rock and you won't erode away. But we need each other. Sometimes I think I'm a very joyful person and my wife's like, stop frowning. I'm like, I'm fine. No, you're not. Then I know I'm not. If you're struggling with joy, struggling with some of the fruit, make sure you dig into the Spirit to find, make sure that the tree is a good tree. Don't try and fabricate it. Let's stand. Let's stand.